right, this is Pure Decking Show number 461 for Thursday, December the 16th, 1773. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and Merry Christmas. And if you're one of those people who gets mad at that, you probably get over people telling you to have a nice day. So this will be the last show this year. I'm thinking second week, maybe third week of January. We'll just see when we come back, when stuff starts picking up again. And, you know, if I've got all the rewiring work I need to do done, about 1,000 other things. Yeah. On the channel tonight, we have Madman. What's up, Madman?
Hola. I have booze. Kind of wishing I was still in high school or going through high school again and in Oregon. Feel free to look up stories in Oregon to find out why.
I'm going to have to figure that one out. And we have an RU.
How you doing? Slowly starting to understand that Alex Jones was right. All along.
He is entertaining.
He certainly is. I'm broadcasting from cell block D right now.
So, Madman, I just quickly Googled it. All I'm seeing is outbreaks of COVID in Oregon. That's not
probably some teacher going around fucking students.
That'd be wanting to be a teacher, possibly, if I were a sicko. No. Completely different. I guess I could ruin it. A bunch of high school chicks decided to protest against being objectified by showing up to school wearing lace panties and bras and nothing else.
I support their decision, Madman.
Some of them have slogans written on their bodies. I don't know how many of the dudes bothered to read them. And I'm just thinking at this point, is feminism a long troll by a bunch of dudes trying to get into chicks' pants? Because I'm just trying to think, Wouldn't everyone in high school want to see their co-eds wearing nothing but lace panties and bras?
Dude, at this point, I've lost the plot. I have no idea.
I'm objectifying you by looking at you, and you're showing up as close to naked as you can be without going to jail.
You said they had slogans written on them. I wonder how many of those slogans were links to their OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Well,
or whatever social media thing.
I'm not
going
to try to do an image search because I don't want to be on lists. I just thought the story was entertaining for...
Oh, yeah, high school girls. I guess they would be underage, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
I'm going with a percentage of them and probably a high percentage of them.
Yeah, probably stay away from that story just in case pics have been added. Because I don't trust the media. How many last week were caught for being kitty diddlers?
I just wouldn't want to go back to high school. I mean, man.
No, me either, man. As further as fucking place I'd want to be.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go back at my age, but if I was, you know, 13, 14 again?
Dude, I don't want to go through that shit again.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Can you imagine the torture of taking, you know, going back to that age again, but knowing everything you know now?
Oh.
Now, are we going back in time at that age or sticking with current year at that age?
Back in time.
Oh, fucking yes. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, sure. You could predict all the stock moves and a bunch of other stuff. So you'll end up in an insane asylum for predicting 9/11.
I'll keep my mouth shut about that one.
I just figured how Alex Jones got where he was. He's a time traveler.
But you'll make so many correct stock decisions that you have the FCC all over your FTC all over your ass.
Dude, I just dump everything in Apple, sit back and wait.
NFTs, man, all in NFT. No.
Still not understanding that.
Oh, you'll enjoy the next South Park, the second after COVID or whatever they call it, where they're grown up.
Yeah, a little too hammered to watch that last night, so I'll catch it tonight.
Yeah, let me know when you guys have seen it, because I have thoughts. But anyways, I I kind of felt like it was a little too Back to the Future at the end. I'm just going to leave it at that. Anyways, let's go ahead and get into this. First article I have for tonight is from The Guardian. Australia and the U.S. signed Cloud Act deal to help law enforcement agencies demand data from tech giants. So Australia and the U.S. have signed a deal to speed up information sharing about criminal suspects between law enforcement agencies and tech companies, including social media giants. Under the deal, the U.S. Clarifying Lawful Overseas Use of Data Cloud Act, good God, who named that, will allow Australia and the U.S. law enforcement agencies to use existing warrants to demand information from overseas-based companies to prevent, detect, investigate, and prosecute serious crime. Now, I'm just thinking about this, and are you, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm not aware of any major cloud data, social media, or other big data tech giants in your country.
Not that I'm aware of.
I mean, sure, you have your ISPs, like two of them, but and I'm sure a lot of them have local, you know, a lot of the social media places will have their local hosting for, you know, you trying to go over their overseas cable for you know, some of that stuff would be a bit much.
I mean, the problem stems from the government had a win over Facebook, and now the government thinks they're invincible.
What this sounds to me like is that the United States is going to honor Australia's warrants when it comes to social media and big data, you know, data companies. Because let's be honest, most of them operate out of California. So
yeah,
I don't like it. I'd like them to stick with international channels, but I'm not terribly opposed to it as long as they're valid warrants, except for the fact that your government has been very scary lately. So I don't know that a valid warrant from your government is all that valid.
Well, I don't think even anything from my government's warranted right now.
The question is how many protections are they giving up? Because this may run afoul of the 14th Amendment. U.S. companies on U.S. soil acting in the U.S. still have our protections. And don't get me wrong, Australia is, despite what's going on, still a relatively free country. And I have to say that because look at
suck my dick, madman. Suck my fucking dick.
When compared to the world, are you more or less free than North Korea, Saudi Arabia, China? And there's a lot of shithole countries. But you're still, I don't think you have the protections we have.
No.
And this is giving up protections that these companies, if they're U.S. companies, have for being in the U.S.
They want to be regulated, madman. All Facebooks and that of the world, they want regulation now. That way they can be the only players in the game. That's why you're seeing all this happen. If I'm wrong, I'll walk it back, but...
Cycross, are we not live? He said, is the show happening? And then he said, this isn't... Maybe it's because we're hitting this. Yeah. I mean, it's not straight up tech, but I mean, it's certainly related since it's laws about it.
We're definitely live.
Okay.
Well, anyway, back to Mad Men. I've lost my train of thought, but
Well, let's see what the article says here. The agreement allows authorities to demand data from communication service providers operating in the other's jurisdiction, reducing the time taken to obtain information. This means companies including email providers, telcos, social media platforms, and cloud storage services could soon find themselves answering to warrants from law enforcement agencies based in the U.S. or Australia rather than their home jurisdiction. Questions remain about the practical effects of the deal, given the drive towards encryption of information that keeps data at arm's length from the tech companies themselves, such as Facebook's provisioning of end-to-end encryption for its users on WhatsApp. I there are better alternatives than WhatsApp, I'm just going to say. In October 2019, the former Home Minister's Affair, Peter Dutton, publicly lobbied Facebook not to roll out encryption, which he said would put users' messages out of reach of police even with a court-ordered warrant. Facebook responded that people have the right to a private conversation online, and the Cloud Act allows for companies to provide available information when they receive a valid legal request, but does not require companies to build backdoors. The Home Minister's Affair, the Home Affairs Minister, Karen Andrews, said the Cloud Act agreement included, quote, important safeguards, unquote, reflecting the two countries' respect for the rule of law and for human rights. I thought you would enjoy this story, are you?
What the listeners have to understand is Peter Dutton in the last 10 years has covertly bought every enforcement agency under his wing. He is the personal runner of all of it. They've pretty much built a super buying capability on everybody in the country, from your bank account right down to where you travel. This is all the new cameras they put in.
Let's see, quote, as we saw in Operation Ironside, the Australian Federal Police and the Federal Bureau of Investigation are already capable of smashing serious organized crime networks using sophisticated digital techniques, unquote, Andrews said in a statement. This agreement brings that partnership to new heights. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland said the deal would ensure, quote, more efficient cross-border transfers of data so that our governments can more effectively counter serious crime, including terrorism, while adhering to the privacy and civil liberties values we both share, unquote. Andrews, who is in Washington, flagged that she will meet senior officials and law enforcement partners to discuss collaboration on cybersecurity, protecting critical infrastructure, countering terrorism, and preventing serious and organized crime. The Cloud Act agreement will now undergo parliamentary and congressional review processes in both countries. No further legislation is required after the International Production Orders Bill passed in July paves the way for the deal, although Parliament will still be able to disallow it. So now you need an act of Parliament or Congress to
both need to approve it. Because if one country doesn't agree, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah. The safeguards in the Australia-US deal are still unclear. The US's first Cloud Act deal with the UK mandated that each country would gain permission before using the data for death penalty prosecutions in the US for cases implicating freedom of speech in the UK. In 2019, Labour welcomed Cloud Act negotiations but questioned whether a deal would require a coalition to amend encryption legislation. Oh, that's what it fucking is. That legislation attempts to overcome the problem of encrypted messaging by co-opting technology companies, device manufacturers, and service providers into building functionality needed for police to do this spying. The Law Council and tech firms warned the law could prevent Australia qualifying for a Cloud Act agreement because it may breach U.S. requirements that foreign countries have robust... Okay, that's what it is. So, a lot of law enforcement agencies in the States really don't like encryption because it means they can't just monitor what you're doing online, like the NSA has been doing for years. Anyways, they can't just, you know, sit back and listen. They actually have to, you know, do work, go collect devices, go do actual, you know, police work and investigations and shit. And that's hard and that requires work. So instead, they'd much rather be able to just, you know, tell Facebook to give them all the information they want whenever they have a suspect they're dealing with, right? And admittedly, for efficiency of investigating, if somebody's doing something horrendous, I want them caught for it and dealt with. But what I don't like is, okay, we're going to have this agreement with Australia, because I'm sitting there trying to figure this out, you know, because I was joking about not that much as being hosted in Australia that U.S. authorities would be all that interested in. And they're really not. But if Australia starts passing a bunch of laws requiring backdoors on encryption, and we have this, you know, treaty, because treaties are a way of getting some interesting legislation passed, it's not a law that violates the Constitution, but we have this treaty we need to abide by. That's what they're doing, is they want to use Australia's much stricter rules on encryption to try to get our tech companies to back down on it. Madman, please. Somebody tell me I'm wrong on that, because that's a scary fucking train of thought.
No, that you're right. That's what's happening.
The tech companies would have the same challenges as if it were a U.S. law. And another way around it is whatever they don't want to be subject to Australia's encryption laws, host it in California. And the reason they would host it in California is if it's hosted in California and the individuals they're searching for are anywhere in the U.S., even if Australia issues a warrant, they don't have standing, the warrant doesn't matter. The only way that a U.S. tech company would fall afoul of it is if the warrant was for an Australian citizen and the information was being held on a U.S. Server by a U.S. tech company, then Australia could assert that they have jurisdiction over their citizen so long as the citizen is within their country, and try to push it that way.
Yeah, they're just setting up a nasty fight in the courts. Good times, right?
As always.
This next one up is just funny. And, Cycros, for the record, I have no idea what you're on about in the IRC there. I'm just going to say that. This next one is from Torrent Freak. The UK Parliament's House of Lords has heard calls for significant tightening of copyright law to tackle a most unusual threat. According to several lords, the law should be updated to prevent live sporting events from being filmed by the public. Not to prevent piracy per se, but to close a loophole that is being exploited by some to win large sums in the gambling market. While there are plenty of stories of people hitting the proverbial jackpot when gambling, there are many more tales of the habits becoming a problem. As a result, bookmakers are often portrayed as preying on victims, even trying every trick in the book to part people from their money. But what if there's a way to even things out a little, to beat the bookies, as it were? As it stands, a small but insignificant loophole certainly exists and has for some time. In days gone by, when people placed a bet on a team to win, a fight to prevail, or a horse to reach the post first, bets were placed before the event even started. However, modern technology now allows people to place in-play bets, attempting to predict who will score the next goal, win the next round, or in a horse race, even throw away a big lead to come second or worse. While there is nothing particularly unusual here, and there's an open secret to consider, when people watch sporting events live, even on bookmakers' own apps, the images on screen are already seconds old. So if a horse has a seemingly insurmountable lead on screen, and someone places a bet, that information is already out of date for everyone watching. Anything could have happened. For bookmakers, however, everything happens live, which is a big advantage. But what if there's a way to narrow the odds by stealing a few seconds back? In horse racing, it appears there is. Through the use of high-specification drones deployed near racetracks, some enterprising individuals are streaming live feeds of horse races back to punters who watch in near real time. It's the equine version of so-called court siding that has netted some gamblers millions over the years and is equally frowned upon. Importantly, however, none of this is illegal in the UK, so it appears to be an overreaction with a significant potential for overreach. Lawmakers want a change to copyright law to re-tip the balance of power. So what they're saying here is, because the bookies are getting their feeds off the major networks, and the major networks usually have a few seconds of lag, somebody doing their own private live stream might, you know, get a couple of seconds back and be able to make bets on things that have just happened, but the bookies haven't seen yet, especially when you're doing things like online betting.
This is a gig that goes back to the wire service, the original wire service stuff. That's why gangsters and shit had run their own wires and things like that. That way they'd be a couple of seconds ahead of the actual radio broadcast. So I don't see the problem.
Well, the problem is they're going to pass a law making it illegal to, you know, live stream events unless you're, you know, a network TV.
Dude, I think in-game betting's fucking retarded. I get why people do it. only do it if you can afford it, I suppose. But I don't know, man. My country is drowning in gambling. I'm not a moralist on it or anything. I'm not into it. Every second, you know, every ad in America is about, you know, have you got blah, blah, blah syndrome? Well, take this from your doctor. Every second ad here is for betting on horses or football.
Oh,
or,
good Lord.
It's terrifying, man. Right down to the thing, right down to the point now where you get extra odds, like better gambling odds, if you are with more than three people at a bar. You know what I mean? Like, so they encourage you to get your friends onto the app. The more people on that app, the better the sports betting is. It's
the last time I was watching some live TV, which is when I was visiting my parents' house, because I don't pay for it because I won't watch it enough to justify the cost. Cable, I mean, I saw a bunch of ads for these gambling apps. So
yeah,
I think it's spreading.
They're everywhere. You know, I'm not a fan of, you know, I don't mind two dudes having a little wager here and there, but I'm not a fan of professional gambling. I don't.
In a debate in the House of Lords earlier this month, Viscount Astor, who has deep connections with the horse racing industry, asked the government what plans they have to broaden the scope of the Copyright Designs and Patent Act to include sporting events. As things stand, copyright law protects creative works and similar creations, including films, sound recordings, and broadcasts, such as horse racing events. However, live sporting events in themselves are not eligible for copyright protection until they are captured in broadcast or recording. Even then, anyone with a camera can record in an event without breaking copyright law. Viscount Astor painted this as problematic, since these recordings apparently undermine media rights purchased by sporting bodies. Secondly, such recordings are allegedly funding a vast expansion of illegal gambling. Quote, in this country, terrestrial broadcasters are allocated low spectrum to transmit pictures, which results in 1 second or 2 second delay between the live action and the broadcast, he explained. If you fly a drone that is linked to a camera and then to a mobile telephone, or use one or more mobile telephones to record an event, you can transmit those pictures faster than television pictures, as mobile telephones use higher spectrum frequency and therefore have up to a 2 second... Okay, that's not how any of that works.
How any of this works.
Yes, okay. The higher spectrums have more waves per inch or meter, however you're measuring it. That's true. You know, millimeter wave and all that fun stuff. But, you know, so you get more data, but radio all moves roughly at the speed of light. Roughly. I don't remember the exact numbers. But, I mean, radio's radio. I mean, they all, you know, the higher spectrums get more data in the same amount of time, but they're not actually faster.
I mean, maybe at the return, the end there, you may be able to decode the data a little quicker with the higher spectrum stuff.
Well, yeah, you know, that's the difference between, like, you know, a low definition old school television picture and a modern HD picture, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not any faster, but you get more data across the pipe. So if you're copying a file from point A to point B, yeah, that's faster because it's getting more done at once. But if it's real-time information, frequency is not faster than the other.
It doesn't work like that.
I mean, that's I'm sorry. That is how physics works. Not to mention, all major broadcasters, including the idiot with the drone or, you know, the licensed guys, all use internet links these days. That explains a lot. Psychro says he had clicked on the link for one of the old IHN recordings, not the live show. I was like, because he was reacting to some very strange things, and I'm like, I did not know what he was on about. I'm like, what?
That's like saying describe a horse to me, and he starts describing an alligator. What the fuck are you talking about?
No, describe a horse to me, and you start giving a very detailed description of a steam locomotive.
Yeah. Two very different shows.
It reminds me of a... I shouldn't talk about that on air. I've had some rather piss poor interviews at work, so we'll just leave it at that. Yes, quote, back to Lord Idiot here. Quote, so rogue operators are selling live pictures at a discount, and sporting bodies are losing out from the resulting diminution of their media income. This means that when they have to renegotiate media rights, they will be offered less. And is a drowned Viscount Astor, or Viscount, V-I-S-C-O-N-U-T. Viscount? Is that how you say that? Viscount?
Viscount.
I thought that was Viscount, but I'm sitting there going, why is there an S in there? Anyways, it's like spelling color with an extra U. Viscount Astor painted the media rights issue as hugely problematic, but there's no actual evidence to show that such streams are available outside a select group of hardcore insiders. And Greach,
I was going
to
say.
Yeah, it's like not enough people actually care. Sorry. Indeed, should anyone attempt to scale up such operations, precious second-long delays would inevitably be introduced, rendering them much less attractive. Nevertheless, he pressed his colleagues with the suggestion that third-party streams fuel illegal gambling on sites that are often based abroad and therefore totally unregulated. Quote, the illegal sites beat the bookmakers and betting shops by the 2 seconds when the broadcast is transmitted because many bets are put on in the running or during a game. If you have a 2-second advantage, although it might take someone like me a long time to put in a bet, if you're clever and an addict, as it were, you could put in a bet very quickly. And that's what's happening, he said. We do not want to criminalize sporting enthusiasts for filming his favorite sporting event. That's not the point at all. You can't ban people from filming, nor should you. You talk to the Olympics there, buddy. But you can follow the money. We want to stop those who are selling the pictures on and not only debasing media rights, but affecting growth of harmful gambling. Okay, buddy.
If they're worried about harmful gambling, you just outlaw gambling.
Yeah, just ban it.
Yeah. And then it just goes underground anyway.
It just reduces it.
Yeah, it just goes underground.
Ha! I like what Psychro's put in the IRC there. They switched from counts to earls in the UK because count, particularly with a northern accent, sounds too much like cunt.
Nice.
Oh, we're now saying Viscount when next time I have to reference this guy. Racehorse owner Lord Lipsy echoed Viscount Astor's concerns, painting the drone pilot's activities as a scandal of legalized fraud that negatively affects everyone involved in the sport, from fans through to honest bookmakers. Go to a racehorse show now and you can hardly miss the drones. There are perhaps 8 or 10 of them flying about all over the course. So what's going on? As the author of a work of racing fiction, Canner Coop and all bookmarks... Oh, for God's sake, he's pushing a book. I would not dare dream up so implausible a plot as reality of what's going on. In a nutshell, it's tech-assisted cheating, he said. No, it's not. That's not cheating. That's just better technology.
Yeah.
And if I was the bookmaker, I mean, if I was the bookmaker, I would have my own dudes out there getting a live stream, like you were talking about, running your own private wire to avoid the problem of the couple of seconds of delay from the national broadcasts.
But see, it doesn't help you as a bookmaker. All it is right now is the gambler, if they're good, has a slight, a micro advantage over the bookie. For a bookie to set up his own wire service, it's not worth it unless you're doing illegal gambling.
I mean, I kind of have the opinion, if you're a bookie, this is a risky run. You don't want people, if you don't want the bookies to, have to deal with people who can set up a better system than them, ban the gambling and call it a day.
Let's not ban gambling. Make it on-site only.
I'm okay with that, too.
If you want to go punt on the horses or the dish lickers or the trots, go there on the day. Punt on the day. Enjoy the majesty of it. And it's not just about the gambling. It's about the experience. And if you've never been to a Derby day, I highly recommend it.
I've been to the Kentucky Derby. I've been there. It's fun. Hot as fuck because it's in the middle of summer.
And there's a lot to do. You don't really need to gamble, but if you want to go for it. But I think...
A lot of chicks flashing out in the pits. Anyways,
It's a yeah. Make sure you stay right till the end, though. Okay, because the fucking place is an absolute shit show by the end of the night. Yeah, that little tight skirt doesn't look too good now after you've had three bottles of champagne, does it? Yeah, I would prefer to go back to on-site gambling, but hey, the beast it is.
Or if they're having trouble with gambling mid-race, go back to taking the bets and saying once the race starts, bets are closed.
Madman, from what I understand, they've gamified horse racing in that with that on-field betting, they call it. It's really like you're playing a video game. It's fucking ridiculous. And the betting is like, you're already signed into the app. You've got the live app up with the racing, like which race it is. You've got all the features of what you want to do, and then you just press send. That's how quick it is. Well, like $5 win, send.
One of the ways they're trying to go at this is they're trying to ban drones. And it's like, I'm not going to read the rest of the article because we're dwelling on it too long. But
yeah,
it's they're talking about possibly banning drones from sporting events. And now, admittedly, I've got a DJI drone, and it does have zones it won't fly in. And I was flying it near some spots, and I was getting warnings about it. And one of those spots was a stadium. And so... Yeah. You know, a lot of the people who put these things together, I mean, you can go turn that off. You can say, I don't care, fly anyways, basically. Well, you used to be able to do that. In the newer versions of the app, you have to like downgrade it and put a different firmware on the drone. There's ways to do it. It's been a bit since I looked at it. I think one of them involved loading fake map data to not have the, or to strip out the restricted fly zones. There's a way to do that. But
change your starting GPS point.
Yeah, I could see that one too. So
that's pretty easy.
Or just turn the GPS off.
And there you go. And just hope you don't lose sight of it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about down under, but we already have a solution for this problem.
Those net launcher things? If
you own land, you actually own so many feet above your land. And just say, only my cameras are allowed to be here. All other drones are trespassing. And we have falcons trained to take out drones.
They have those net launcher things, too. So
you don't need to pass a law. You just say, the Australian Broadcast Service is the only one that's paid me to record this. They're the only drones allowed in the air.
Well, I think what's happening is it's people flying the drones away from the stadium and just putting a good camera on it so they can zoom in. Because they were talking about them flying around, not in. So, but I mean, you know, depending on the layout of where the racetrack is, what's to stop somebody from with a pair of binoculars and a, you know, phone call? I mean,
yeah,
you know, I mean,
had to say in race betting. Ta-da, problem solved.
Yeah, there's that too. I just think that's a risk the bookies have to take, is that somebody else has figured out a better system than them. You know, it's sort of like the casinos who get all upset at card counters and people who put down the system. It's like, no, that's the risk you run by running these games. You know, you don't get to just ban people who figured out technique. You can certainly ban people who are cheating. I'm not saying that, you know, but... You know, if somebody's got the proverbial X-ray specs as a really bad example, I mean, sure, but, you know, it's stuff like that's not, you know, if somebody's just figured out a better system, a way to game it, that's a risk you run of running a gambling operation. I think that's just cost of doing business. Now, you know, of course, you have the right to ask somebody to leave your premises, which they often do if they think you're card counting, but... Or you just win too much and they decide you're not worth the financial loss. But, yeah, I mean, it's a risk of doing business, if you ask me.
Yeah. Next story?
Next story. This one, well, not this exact link, but this one was sent to me by Madman. Kronos hack will likely affect how employers issue paychecks and track hours. A ransomware attack on one of the largest human resource companies may impact how many employees get paid and track their time off. Human Resources Management Ultimate Kronos Group, known as Kronos, said it suffered a ransomware attack that may keep its systems offline for weeks. To ensure employees are paid, companies that rely on the software are working to find backup plans, including issuing paper checks, for some for the first time in years. Kronos is used widely around the U.S. by businesses and governments to track employees' hours and issue pay. Its many customers include municipal governments, university systems, and large corporations. NPR uses Kronos. According to a spokesperson for Kronos, the ransomware attack has affected only customers that use a particular product called the Kronos Private Cloud. Quote, we took immediate action to investigate and mitigate the issue. We have alerted our affected customers and informed the authorities, and we're working with leading cybersecurity experts. We recognize the seriousness of the issue and have mobilized all available resources to support our customers and are working diligently to restore the affected services, the spokesperson said in a statement to NPR. Dozens of companies and government organizations announced this week that they've been affected by the attack, and a number that falls short of the attack's likely impact given the ubiquity of Kronos. The hack has affected scheduling products designed specifically for healthcare systems, financial institutions, and public safety workers. Over the course of Monday and Tuesday, many employers announced to their staffs that they had been affected, such as employees of New York's Metropolitan Transit Authority, hospital workers in San Angelino, Texas, and public water workers in Honolulu. In the city of Cleveland, which employs thousands of workers, said in a statement Monday that it is among the employers that relied on the hack software, as does the Oregon Department of Transportation and a number of universities, such as the University of Utah, George Washington University, and Yeshiva University in New York, also reported being affected. The extent to which individual employees are affected depends on how their employer uses the software. Employers that use Kronos to clock employees in and out of shifts may ask workers to manually track start and end times, while companies that rely on Kronos to issue paychecks may send out paper checks so long as the service is down. Employers may also choose to issue generic paychecks that compensate employers for a baseline number of scheduled hours rather than the actual hours worked and later issue corrections as needed. Oh, that gets dangerous. The Fair Labor Standards Act requires employers to track hours worked by employees no matter the timekeeping method used, in other words, via Kronos, a manual time card, or otherwise, then pay workers promptly. Individual states may further govern how often those paychecks must come. As for personal data, what employee information is stored in Kronos and therefore could be exposed to attackers varies by employer. In statements to employees, several companies have said they believe most sensitive personal data, including Social Security numbers, had not been breached. But the city of Cleveland warned employers that the last four digits of the Social Security number could be at risk. The service could be out for several weeks, according to a blog post by Bob Huge, Kronos Chief Consumer and Strategy Officer. The post was published Sunday, though it was later inaccessible. Because the fix could take longer to affect payroll and scheduling operations, the company has urged employers to seek out, quote, alternative business continuity protocols, unquote, while it works on a fix. They talk about, then the article goes on, is this related to Log4j, and they don't know. So, this is one of the things that really sucks about how service-oriented things have gotten, where it used to be, if you were setting up a company or running a company or a large organization, you would build an HR department and they would manage payroll. Well, now you can outsource it. You know, you just go to this website, clock your time. They'll issue, you know, and then do the paychecks through the website. Well, now the website's down. Oops. Right in time for Christmas. Good luck, you know, and good, you know, hopefully your paychecks are right, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And one downside to this is when companies used to handle their own HR, each individual company would have to be attacked. Now you go after one company and you get how many people's data? Because they're tracking your pay. They're probably also handling deductions because most Americans don't pay their taxes directly. It's withheld from their paychecks and sent to the IRS. Otherwise, we'd have to pay taxes quarterly. Most of us don't do that. So they're going to at least need to know how to pay your taxes if they're handling your payroll.
So just saying, this is potentially going to be a problem, because if you have companies who just say, we can't issue payroll right now because the system is down, and there will be companies that say that, the week of Christmas? Fucking really? I mean, that's a bad time for all involved.
Yeah, not just the week of Christmas. Leading up, this happened over a week ago. Been affected ever since.
Well, I could ask, Mad Ben, is the company you work for affected? Because you sent me the article.
I have insider knowledge on how long it's been down.
I see. If that's how you wish to state it, we can say we understand and move on.
It has been down since at least Wednesday. Now, depending on how individual companies may want to handle it, some trust their employees to say how long they've been working. Others, those employees may be fucked.
So, I mean, that's a problem.
I'm not thinking it's just as much that Kronos was hacked, because I don't always like to blame the victim, and this could have been something that the company couldn't solve for. A phishing email sent to an idiot. You can't filter out all the idiots. But when I saw this, I started thinking, should we allow companies to outsource all of their critical infrastructure and then just write off saying, we expected those guys to take care of it? Because you're exposing employees to risk they didn't necessarily sign up for. So when I started doing business with my employer, I know they need certain information for recording requirements and for, you know, business, whatever. I have to trust them with my information to get paid, because they also have to report that they're paying me to the government for several reasons. But that's me trusting them.
Outsourcing.
I don't trust a dozen other companies with my info.
Outsourcing payroll, though, is nothing new. A lot of companies, big companies, have been doing that for years. Now, what I don't like is the idea that, oh, our outsourcing agent is having an issue, so we just can't pay you right now. And you know that's going to happen. Now, the problem here is, sure, you could make laws requiring that they pay promptly. You could make laws requiring that they have some sort of a business continuity or backup plan to handle their primary service provider being out. How do you enforce those? You know, if you have a smallish company with 20 employees and they just say, sorry, guys, Kronos is down. You know, we'll make it up. We'll make your paychecks up to you in a few weeks when they come back up, but we can't process until. What? Are they all going to just quit on the spot to punish the company or try to sue the owners? How does that, well, you know, how does that work? Most people won't.
I don't know smallish companies that use Kronos. And I know I'm limited to only knowing the back ends of about 20 smallish companies, but they still do in-house bookkeeping. All the ones I know of that have outsourced, they are the corporations.
So, but even then, you know, a lot of times, you know, you're talking about your hourly employees at like grocery stores and stuff, right? So with stuff like that, do you really think you're going to have these people putting together lawsuits to sue their employers because they're not doing prompt payroll? I mean, sure, they'll bitch and moan about it online and make them look bad, but...
Oh, on most of these, they would just go to... Oh, crap. I was about to say OSHA, but that's not the right one. We actually do have government watchdogs for
Department
for that
of Labor.
Shit. Department of Labor, and just complain to them. But I'm wondering, should we require certain infrastructure within a company to remain within a company?
I don't think it's a bad idea, but that's really hard to mandate. But I mean, yeah, the idea of saying if you're a registered company, you have to meet these requirements. I mean, you could do that, but I would be concerned about having a seatbelt law at that point where, you know, seatbelts haven't changed in 30 years because the government mandated what they are, even though we know how to make much better ones now. Go ahead, RU. I didn't mean to step on you there.
I don't think the government should be regulating how a company runs itself apart from within the law.
That's what we're arguing is what should be the law.
That's my opinion.
So if the government passes a law saying it's okay for a company to execute every fourth employee, that's fine because it's within the law.
I was just pointing
out the error in what you were saying. The government can only regulate within the law. Well, that's what they always do. It's just, what should the law be?
No, I don't think the law should be over regulation. The company should, as long as it meets its requirements, I don't think the government should have any say in it. That makes any sense, Madman?
No. No, it doesn't.
Well, it needs to pass all the OSHA shit. It needs to pass the environmental stuff. How you run your payroll on that is not the government's problem, as long as you pay your taxes on time. That's between you and your employee. Yeah. And say payroll keeps going out constantly, the company's going to get a bad reputation, not paying its people.
Well, and that's true. Like if Kronos has these outages and they keep happening or they get extended, I mean, they very well may lose contracts over this. You know, they could go
out of business over this.
I mean, they could certainly be in breach of contract. So some people might be ending their relationship with them. It's going to be a pain in the ass to change services, but
our healthcare system had a major fuck up about 15 years back when they changed their payroll system. They completely bollocks it up for about 9 months. Our healthcare has never come back to the levels of staffing that it once had.
Yeah,
because people just walked away.
Well, if you're not paying them, can you blame them?
Whoa, dude. Eight months without fucking pay? You know, things like that. It's ridiculous.
And that's kind of Madman's point. It's like, well, should we allow them to go through these outsourcing just when that seems like it might increase the likelihood of that happening? It certainly makes a target if you're trying to just, you know, attack the economy as opposed to, an individual corporation.
It's also not just attack the economy. What if you just want to commit identity theft? We're making big, big banks of attack here instead of a lot of little targets that might not be worth attacking.
Well, if I want to do identity theft, I don't do ransomware and alert the people that I'm in the network.
Yeah.
But that's a completely different conversation. That's not... So, I mean, I'm kind of with... I kind of think what RU is saying... You know, what he meant was that we shouldn't be expanding what the government, you know, requires of companies.
I'm not putting a fine enough point on it. I mean, we could debate that for a whole hour anyway.
Mm-hmm. I think the idea of having regulations about or laws about properly compensating your employees so that you can't demand they work off the clock if they're, you know, you can't fuck them around and things like that. I mean, I think that's fair enough, but saying that you can't outsource your payroll, I mean, that's been going on a long time. I think that's a harder argument to say that you can't outsource that business function. Because that's ultimately what it is. It's a bookkeeping and business function, right?
Yeah.
So saying you can't outsource a particular business function, I think there's merit to the argument, but I think it kind of runs afoul of you know, what you want to be, you know, where you want to draw the line when it comes to regulations. I think your better bet is to put requirements on the company to not mistreat their employees and make sure they make payroll in a reasonable period of time.
Those are already there.
And the problem becomes enforcement, because if you're going to be the asshole who sues your company for not paying you on time, the likelihood of having a job, and if word gets out that you're the one who did that, you know, getting another job somewhere else might be difficult. So they may not be as enforced as they should be. But I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one. That's rough, you know. But I also think we've got 15 minutes left, and I've still got four links to cover. Two of them are dojo links. They'll be quick, but still.
Next story?
Next story is from Ars Technica. Automakers keep trying to get that get a piece of that sweet subscription income. Now it's Toyota's turn. Nearly every car company offers some sort of subscription package, and Toyota has one called Remote Connect. This service offers the usual flair, letting owners use an app to remotely lock their doors, for example, or if they own a plug-in vehicle, to precondition the interior. But as some of the complimentary subscriptions for Remote Connect come to an end, so complimentary being they came with the car, Toyota owners are getting an unexpected surprise. They can no longer use their key fob to remote start their vehicles. In terms of technology, this remote start feature is no different from using the fob to unlock the car. The fobs use a short-range radio transmitter to send the car a signal that is encrypted with rolling codes. The car then decrypts the signal and performs the requested action, whether it's to lock or unlock the doors, beep the horn, start the engine. The RF key fobs have been around since the 1980s, and GM added a factory-installed remote start option in 2004. No subscription needed. Hell, my car has a remote start option. I'm not paying a monthly fee for that. That car's been paid off for 3 years. I haven't paid jack to Ford in 3 years on that car, and the remote start still works fine. The key fob remote start has nothing to do with an app, nor does the car or the fob communicate with any service managed by Toyota. Toyota has been offering factory-installed remote start on 2018 and newer vehicles equipped with Audio Plus or Premium Audio. To use it, owners have to be within 50 feet of the vehicle and double-press the fob's lock button before holding down the lock button for a few seconds. Yet recently, as 2018 Toyotas have passed their third birthday, owners have been discovering that the fob's functionality is dependent on maintaining an active Remote Connect subscription. Vehicles equipped with Audio Plus receive a free 3-year trial, while premium audio vehicles receive 10 years. Once those subscriptions expire, though, the key fob remote start stops working. Toyota didn't change the rules, though the detail was buried in the fine print. When the time comes, Toyota simply cuts off access to one of the functions of the key fob already in the owner's possession. To get the feature back, owners have to pony up $8 a month or $80 a year. So they're literally just disabling random shit on the car to get you to pay a monthly fee to use it. I think we did a similar story about heated seats.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
we've been talking about this for a while.
Yeah.
Vehicles as a service. You'll own nothing.
But if you have a Toyota built before November 12, 2018, then you won't have to pay, even though the key fob remote start for those vehicles was also tied to Remote Connect. Toyota says that it has enhanced those cars so that owners can use the feature without a subscription. Why the cutoff? It may seem like an arbitrary date, but it happens to be when Toyota stopped building cars with 3G chips. As telecoms sunset their 3G networks, owners of older Toyotas will have no way to subscribe or use Remote Connect. Since the key fob remote start doesn't require an internet connection, Toyota just flipped a switch and gave it to everyone in the group. So, yeah, it's literally just disabling random shit on the car trying to get you to pay a monthly subscription for it.
Oh, there's going to be a market for garage hacking for cars.
Madman, there already is.
Bite me. When I pay for something, I pay for something. I bought the fucking car.
It's good. And you know what the worst part is, Madman? It's going to be some stupid expensive kit to go in and unlock the firmware on the car so that you can use the shit that the car came with without having to pay a subscription.
The little box is very expensive to buy, and you need to be a dealership to own one.
Yeah. And it's going to be a fucking Raspberry Pi in a project box. That's the joke of it. $30 little single board computer with some GPIO pins that you just hook up to the ODB2 and you know, flip whatever flag in the firmware. That's the gag.
I've touched one of the machines. I've seen one be working. I can tell you, it's not a Raspberry Pi in a box.
Okay, fair
enough. I'm telling you right now.
Well, I mean, it just means they're going to start encrypting shit.
Oh, some cars already are. That's why I can tell you this is not a Raspberry Pi in a box. I've seen this machine take a while to get in.
Now you're making me think about the conversation we had the other day, and like, damn it. I'm just going to have to maintain the car I got for forever, which is going to get harder and harder to do.
Not really, if you stay on top of it, man. Mine's an 09. You know, it's still going strong.
There are certain things I can understand a subscription for. Satellite radio, you're paying for the station to stay on the air. OnStar, whatever. But the start on my car, there's nothing to maintain.
They're just doing trial to see what they can charge her for.
Wait till your mandatory interlocker stops working, madman. That's a future problem all Americans are going to have.
Well, didn't they try to pass something requiring?
I think they got it through. Yeah. All cars will be connected to the internet with this thing, and the engine won't start if you don't get a clean breath of health or some shit.
Breathalyzer. It was in the Build Back Better. It hasn't passed yet, and it may or may not be there when it passes. Some people try to strip it out. Some put it back in.
Do you know how big the Mothers for Drink Driving campaigners are in America? They're a voting bloc in themselves. Thank you, Nancy Reagan, you cunt.
And there'll be an entire industry of people bypassing that thing.
That's what your pet's for.
Just get the dog to blow into the breathalyzer. Guarantee, no alcohol there. What the fuck?
Why should you be eating cat shit?
Before you ever,
Fluffy, before what have you been getting into?
Blow up a couple of balloons and you can drive home.
Just pay children on the street to blow up the balloons for you.
Oh, damn it. I see how high schoolers are going to be getting their beer in the future. The drunk guy's going to buy him a six-pack, but before they can have a drink, they have to breathe into his car.
All right. Last article is from Vice. Man got past security features to access his ex-girlfriend's digital wallet while she was asleep. A Chinese man has been jailed for lifting his sleeping girlfriend's eyelids to unlock her phone so he could steal money from her digital wallet. So the chick he was, you know, dating was asleep. So he grabs her phone, holds it to her face, pulls her eyes open while she's asleep to unlock the phone, and drains her digital wallet. I mean, scumbag? Also, deep sleeper on the chick's part, right?
Yeah.
The man in the southern city of Nanning, surnamed Huang, was recently sentenced to 3.5 years in prison and fined about $3,000 American dollars, for stealing about 154,000 Chinese yuan, or $24,000, from his ex-girlfriend's mobile payment account, according to the Nanning Evening News. So wait, he stole $24,000 and they only fined him three? Did he have to, like, return the rest of it?
Must have.
I hope. Otherwise, it sounds like that's a very profitable industry. It's like, yeah, just have a fall guy that you just cover the cost of, and the 28-year-old visited his ex-girlfriend, surnamed Dong, in December last year after telling her he wanted to return some money he borrowed while they were dating. Oh, so they were already broken up. Dong was sick at the time, and Huang prepared food and cold medicine. After the woman fell asleep, so he drugged her. After the woman fell asleep, Huang put her finger on her smartphone to unlock the device, and then lifted her eyelids to pass the facial recognition check on the payment app Alipay. He then transferred money from her savings account and credit services to his own account, took away her phone and a coat, and used the fund on living expenses and covering his gambling debts. Dong woke up the next morning, saw the transfer records on her other phone. She made a report to the police after failing to reach the ex-boyfriend, Huang, who had fled to another city and was arrested in April of this year, the report said. The case went viral on Chinese internet over the weekend and prompted discussion on the security lags of facial recognition checks. Some social media users suggested turning off fingerprint and facial payment functions and sticking with passwords. In response to the case, a customs service representative told news outlet Yushu Video that Alipay that Alipay would offer compensation in the rare case of theft, and users could turn on multiple locks to enhance security. So she might have gotten some of her money back from Alipay. But, I mean, scumbag.
Yep.
So, you know, the suggestions about turning off the biometrics on your phone might not be the worst thing in the world. I don't remember seeing it anywhere, but I know a lot of them will disable the biometrics after 24 hours if the device hasn't been unlocked in that time. I wonder if you can shorten that to where, like every 4 hours or something like that, or even, you know, if you have to use the code if you haven't unlocked the device in an hour kind of thing. I know that would be really obnoxious, but it might be worth it. Or maybe having some sort of a... you know, there's different automation things you can do on your phones. You know, Apple has the one they bought, which, what's it called, Shortcuts. And there's a couple of different ones for Android now where you can do automations. Maybe set up an automation to disable the biometrics if you're going to be around somebody you don't particularly trust.
Or just anything that involves payments require a code as well as the biometrics.
Yeah, and that's going to depend on the individual apps, but I'm sure there's ways to set most of that up.
I don't think she would have been as pissed if, you know, he was just checking her messages or making a phone call. It's the stealing her cash that really pissed her off.
That's a lot of cash to steal, too. Oh, and Ari's just like, and this is why I don't have a phone.
Yep.
First thing I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is an interesting little project called AmpiTube. And what this is a YouTube client. I like what Cycrus just said. Hey, man, I'm hearing that having a phone got this girl some free roofies. I guess if you're into that kind of thing. So what AmpiTube is, and this is hilarious to me, is a YouTube client for 6800K Amigas. So like classic Amiga 500s and 1200s. You know, like 3 megahertz and 8 megahertz machines that have no business being on the internet in the first place, let alone playing a YouTube video. And the guy has a video demonstrating it working on an Amiga 1200. So it downloads the video and then decodes it and plays it using one of the different MPEG libraries there. So, and you know, he's saying you probably need a video accelerator to be able to actually play the video on the device. As amusing as that is, this is probably a lot more useful if you run Amiga emulators to use classic software and games. But I thought it was hilarious and worth linking. So here it is. If you play around with classic computers, this is actually pretty cool. Minimum requirements for... He's got two versions. One is for the 68,000 version, running 68,000 OS 3 with 4 megs of RAM and an accelerator. Running 3.8 for the 6020 version, OS 3, 4 megs of RAM, and an accelerator. So he's got two different builds depending on your chip. If you know, want to get that Amiga 1200 out of the closet and watch some YouTube on it, there you go. And then finally, this last one I have for you tonight is called the Busy Simulator. The Busy Simulator is... I just realized I forgot to throw the AmiTube link in the... IRC, so we'll fix that real quick. There we go. The Busy Simulator is really meant to help out those people who are returning to office. And, you know, their company is demanding they're back in the office. And they don't want to, you know, they want their boss to think they're busy, right? So what this thing does is it's a web page that has a bunch of icons on it. Google Calendar, Slack, Microsoft Teams, Google Chat, Discord, Apple Mail, Outlook, iMessage, Skype, or your phone vibrating. And when you turn it on, it has random intervals and will just make the noise. the Microsoft Teams noise, the Google Chat noise, the Skype noise, the iMessage noise, or your phone vibrating noise. So it sounds like you're just getting a ton of messages constantly. So if you're wanting to make sure it sounds like you're busy when you're really just playing Minesweeper and Solitaire in the office, that's what I think this is meant for. The other use would be giving yourself an aneurysm if you already work in an environment with multiple messaging services and already have your phone going off 24/7 with this shit. Anyways, another gag of this would be to open up the tab on somebody else's desktop, and this is what I wanted to really say with it. Open it up on somebody else's desktop, minimize it or hide it, and just leave it running, you know, with whatever your company's messaging system is making the noise constantly. And until they track down the browser tab, especially if they're one of those people who keeps 50 or 100 tabs open, you know, bury it in the middle there like a good asshole. And, until they finally figure out they're not really getting Slack messages or Outlook alerts all day long, it's just coming from this, might be a good April Fool's prank or, you know, drive somebody insane enough to take the short way down the stairway. So... Because I've seen people start yelling at their phone when Teams won't stop going off. Because some of these apps don't manage their alerts very well. They really don't. If you get stuck in chat rooms a lot, pulled into incident bridges a lot, and your phone is going to beep at you every time somebody sends something into one of these rooms... And some of them are quite active because people treat them like IRC channels. I've never heard... Well, it wasn't until the first time I went on call where somebody had Nagios set for every fucking alert to send out as a text message that I had actually heard an iPhone glitch out on the text message sound because they just kept coming. I actually had to set up a contact information for the Nagios alerts and mute it because it was running my phone's battery down playing the damned alert sounds.
That's nuts.
No, that's a very poorly configured alert server is what that is. Ooh, and I raised some hell about that.
Every time something happens, send an alert.
Yeah. And I raised some hell about this because it's like, this is insane. This is so useless because now you can't tell what's real, like if I'm getting a real message or if it's just, you know, another web server has gone a kilobyte over the disk space warning and I'm going to get another text message when the cleanup script runs and it clears every 5 minutes. Yeah. So I had some conversations with some people after that week because I'm like, you this is insane. This is not useful. But if you want to give somebody alert fatigue, this busy simulator is certainly a way to do it. We're a little over. That's, of course, all I have for you this week and this year, actually. Of course, listen to the stream while I was working on it. Pure Decking will return probably the third week of January, I'm guessing. Unless we decide to come back sooner than that. Galaxy 15 Radio, site and subreddit, in the IRC tonight, myself, CyberLard, Cycros, and Madman. Madman, closing thoughts.
Merry Christmas. And are you? What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Die Hard. Die Hard or Lethal Weapon. Either one.
Okay.
All right, are you? Closing thoughts.
Speaking of movies, one of the best movies of the year. If you enjoyed Old Henry, you're really going to like The Power of the Dog. Fantastic film. But, I'll catch you all next year.
Yep.
Have a good one. Don't get the kids too drunk. Hang on, that's not right.
It's always so much more fun that way.
Close enough.
And just to roll with it, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation is probably the best Christmas movie. So, anyways.
I think it's
pretty
good.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Time to go nose down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley.